The Rogue Ghost, Episode 17. Scrambling back on my knees, I was gasping for breath as if I had just emerged from a suffocating labyrinth. The ache around my neck was a stark reminder of my recent unwelcome jewelry, hands that felt like they were forged from nightmares. As I risked a glance upward, the night's performance took a turn for the pyrotechnic. Bolts of magical lightning zipped and zagged above like an overzealous light show. Each spark that rained down seemed to dance around me, fizzling out inches from my skin. There I was, the unwilling center of a magical vortex, thinking it couldn't get any worse, while the universe cackled in the background, ready to prove me wrong.
Welcome back, my friends, as we delve further into the intricate maze of mysteries and hidden revelations that define our journey. Recent turns of fate have unveiled truths that not only pull at the threads of our quest but also resonate deeply within the essence of who I am.
Buckle up, because you're about to embark on an odyssey through the aftermath of our boldest caper yet on the Rogue Ghost podcast, an adventure so wild, it'll have you wondering if your life suddenly veered into blockbuster territory. Rewind to our audacious infiltration of the dark heart of mystery itself, the Cerberus Syndicate's masked ball in Prague. There we were, the Rogue Ghost and your favorite sasslinger, masquerading under borrowed personas amongst a congregation of the clandestine elite. Our eyes locked on the prize, the third puzzle box, recently ripped from our clutches, now tantalizingly within reach again. Seizing it back from the jaws of jeopardy? Impossible, or so you would think. But oh, in the grand theater of the Syndicate's gala, the plot only thickens. Just when victory seemed within our grasp, with RG waltzing dangerously close with Jenny, his sweetheart turned traitor, the narrative took an unexpected nosedive into the abyss. As if this masquerade of mischief couldn't get any more chaotic, enter stage left, the cryptic keyword, breach. That's right, the same enigmatic hint Aunt V had left scribbled on a Polaroid. Suddenly, this wasn't just any high-stakes heist at a syndicate soiree, it was a cosmic conundrum with tendrils entwined in every shadow. How Aunt Vanessa got tangled in this tapestry of arcane intrigue is anyone's guess, but rest assured, we're on the case. But here's the kicker, in a twist worthy of a silver screen climax, RG's cover was blown, exposing his true identity to the crowd. But fear not, for we had an ace up our sleeve, a magical bomb that put everyone but us on pause. Snatching the puzzle box amidst frozen foes, I made a beeline for our escape route, a freshly conjured traverse back to our Watermill Haven. RG, in a move that left my jaw on the floor, followed suit, but with Jenny in tow. Now, we've got our very own Ice Queen cooling her heels in our hideout.
After our escape from Prague, the storm of emotions swirling within me was a maelstrom, each thought a wave crashing against the rocks of my resolve. The daring intrusion, the grand masquerade beneath the ancient spires of the castle, and the heart-wrenching encounter with my angel, once my beloved, now revealed as a player in a game far more complex and sinister than I dared imagine, left me adrift in a sea of turmoil and reflection. With my angel now in a state of enforced slumber, thanks to the mystical spray, and secured within the confines of our hidden sanctuary, a heavy mantle of responsibility and guilt shrouded my shoulders. There she lay, a specter of the past, a living enigma whose mere presence was a mirror to my conflicted soul. The act of maintaining her unconsciousness, a necessity born of caution, weighed upon me, a chain forged from the remnants of a bond once pure, now tarnished by betrayal and shadows. The eyes of perception, the network of arcane blood enchantments I painted into the fabric of the Watermill walls, served as our shield against prying eyes. These enchantments, born from the essence of my own being and that of Runeweaver, would also cloak my angel's presence from the relentless gaze of the Cerberus Syndicate, which I knew would spare no effort in their search for her, guided by the unique owl tattoo marking the back of her neck. Yet, Within the storm of my thoughts, a flame of resolve flickered stubbornly, refusing to be extinguished. It was a beacon in the night, a testament to the resilience of the human spirit. Though the path ahead was veiled in shadow, fraught with danger and laden with uncertainty, I was compelled forward, driven by a duty not only to those I call my allies but to my angel herself. The conviction to untangle the web of deceit that ensnared her was my lodestar, guiding me through the darkest of nights. Reflecting on the dance at the masked ball, a dance that was as much a play of shadows as it was a step into the abyss, I marveled at the audacity of the gamble. To take my angel's hand, to move with her as though the world had not shifted beneath our feet, was a risk that danced on the razor's edge between folly and necessity. In that moment of closeness, as we moved in unison to the haunting melody that filled the Spanish hall, I saw a glimmer of the woman I knew, a hint of my angel beneath the facade of the syndicate's enforcer. It was a moment of poignant clarity, a heartrending glimpse into what had been, and what might still be salvaged from the wreckage of our shared past.
Back into the digital trenches I go, diving into the depths of the Odyssey Seekers Forum with the determination of Enola Holmes chasing a new case. Since we turned the syndicate's ball into our personal stage for magical mayhem, the forum's gone quieter than a library during summer break. What was I hoping to find? Maybe a sneaky steganography photo of Jenny, captioned with "Mystery Woman Vanishes in Prague," complete with hidden instructions, anything that screamed clue here. But nope, nada. The silence felt like a scream in space, utterly void and frustrating. Every scroll, every click, felt like I was sifting through the ruins of a long-lost civilization, searching for a sign of life or at least a breadcrumb trail left behind. Taking a break from the keyboard, I attempted to piece together the syndicate's hierarchy, which was like a jigsaw puzzle from hell. From the rank-and-file grunts with their lone wolf tattoos, to the elite's twin emblems of allegiance, it was a who's who of the shadowy underworld, but with more intrigue and less corporate boardrooms. And then, there were our gold-masked friends, the syndicate's holy trinity of trouble. Blonde wolf, brunette wolf, and bearded wolf? Because why should I bother with real names when I can assign dramatic monikers? Their identities remained as mysterious as their masquerade costumes, leaving me determined to sniff out their secrets. Hovering over this puzzle was the enigma of the riddle. Our riddle, now sitting pretty in bearded wolf's paws. In a realm where birdsong fills the air, four voices blend with a prodigy's flair. A melody whispered in the wind's gentle hum, hints of a city where dreams and music become one. The very words in our Christmas card were now a line in the syndicate's twisted sonnet. How they got their mitts on our clue was the million-dollar question, and you bet your bottom dollar I was going to find out.
Beneath the ancient rafters of our watermill hideout turned home, Runeweaver and I had been embroiled in a debate. The pressing issue was none other than the fate of my angel, whose memories lay scattered like leaves in a storm. Proposing a plan born from desperation and a sliver of hope, I considered a journey back to the heart of London, where secrets and solutions lay hidden in plain sight within the walls of my trusted magic dealer shop. Known for his deep well of arcane knowledge and a trove of mystical artifacts, he was perhaps our only hope of finding help for my angel. The idea, though fraught with uncertainty, was met with a mix of skepticism and a flicker of intrigue from Runeweaver. Acknowledging the gravity and the peril of our undertaking, we knew that London's cobblestone streets, steeped in history and magic, could either lead us to salvation or ensnare us further in the web of our adversaries. London awaited, its ancient magic interwoven with the modern day, promising either answers or more questions in our quest to free my angel's memories from their mental prison. Twilight cast a serene glow over the streets of London, painting the city in hues of fading gold and deepening blue as I navigated my way to Harley Street, the ethereal tones of the enchanted music box masking my path. Here, in the beating heart of the city's esteemed medical district, resided a beacon of hope amidst the gathering darkness of uncertainty. Dr. Cassandra Hawthorne's office, renowned for its conventional medicine, promised a haven for those ensnared by the complexities of the mind and spirit. The building, unremarkable at first glance and flanked by its historic neighbors, held within its walls the potential to pierce the veil of mystery shrouding my angel's fragmented memories. As I stepped across the threshold, the ambient warmth and the soft, comforting murmur of the place enveloped me, offering a stark contrast to the tempest of doubts and fears that churned within. I was scarcely through the door when Dr. Hawthorne herself appeared, her presence like a calm in the midst of a storm, her demeanor exuding a blend of professional assurance and a deeply ingrained empathy. It was clear from the outset why my magical dealer had steered me toward her. Dr. Hawthorne was not only a skilled psychiatrist but an adept enchanter, a rare combination that made her uniquely qualified to navigate the intricate paths between the mind's shadows and the soul's light. Our evening meeting had been brokered on the strength of Dr. Hawthorne's underworld reputation, a legacy built on the foundation of decades dedicated to the healing arts, both mundane and mystical. Her expertise, I was assured, was matched only by her discretion and integrity, critical qualities when delving into the realms of magic and memory. As we settled into the quiet sanctuary of her office, I found myself untangling the threads of my angel's story, laying out before her the intricate web of events and emotions that had led us to her doorstep. Dr. Hawthorne listened with unwavering attention, her eyes reflecting a depth of understanding that transcended mere sympathy. When, at last, my narrative reached its current strand, a tangible stillness enveloped the room, a space of contemplation and gravitas. Then, with a kindness that reached beyond mere words, Dr. Hawthorne spoke of a path forward, a strategy rooted in her previous encounters with minds ensnared by external forces. She recounted, with a careful measure of detail, a particularly poignant case that resonated with the shadows of our own story. It was the tale of a close friend, whose partner had been entangled in a web of arcane manipulation, her will subverted by dark enchantments woven in secrecy. Dr. Hawthorne's intervention had been a journey of patience and unwavering resolve, a meticulous unraveling of the enchantment that had claimed her friend's wife. The parallels to our predicament were stark, each word from Dr. Hawthorne imbuing me with a renewed sense of purpose and determination. Her success in restoring the woman's autonomy and breaking the chains of her indoctrination was not just a tale of professional triumph, it was a testament to the healing potential of her unique blend of mystical and medicinal expertise. A spark of hope, so fragile and yet so fiercely resilient, began to kindle within me as she pledged her support. Dr. Hawthorne's assurances were not just empty promises but a guiding light, illuminating a path through the darkness that had seemed impenetrable.
So, R.G. waltzes back from his magical mystery tour in London, arms laden with what could only be described as a feast from the gods of takeout. After a quick update on the plan he hatched with the enchanter psychiatrist, R.G. settled in for an evening of guarding our house guest. As for me, I hunkered down in the basement for an evening of research. My companions for this evening? Fast food and a riddle that's more stubborn than a lock on a treasure chest. In a realm where birdsong fills the air, four voices blend with a prodigy's flair. A melody whispered in the wind's gentle hum, hints of a city where dreams and music become one. Sounds like the beginning of a fairy tale or the back of a really pretentious album cover, right? Well, fairy tale or not, this riddle had me stumped. City names danced from my lips like they were auditioning for a reality show, but none of them sparked the Christmas card into life. Frustration bubbled up like a poorly mixed cocktail, but if there's one thing I've learned, it's that the answer always lies where you least expect it. In a moment of inspiration, or maybe desperation, I shifted my focus from geography to the harmonious world of musical prodigies. That's when the internet, in all its infinite wisdom, served up a juicy morsel, a piece of sheet music titled, The Waltz of the Calling Birds. Now, I'm no Mozart, but even I could tell this was no ordinary tune. Its composer? A Vienna-based musical prodigy named Erich Richter, whose candle sadly burned out way too soon. The moment Vienna slipped from my lips, the air around me crackled with the kind of electric anticipation you feel right before a storm hits. I glanced over at the Christmas card, our magical beacon in this quest, and bam! It lit up like the grand finale of a 4th of July fireworks show. Vienna, previously an unspoken thought, now blazed across the inside of the card. Undeniable confirmation we were on the right track. Crack of dawn, riddle in the bag, but hold the phone, Brunette Wolf's offhand mention of escaping the breach had my gears grinding. Part of me hoped that the Polaroid I found was just a coincidence, but the star of the photo, the enchanter, showing off his radiance like a kid at show and tell, was no happenstance. Just how in the world did Aunt Vanessa find herself entangled in the syndicate's spiderweb of schemes? The allure of her enigmatic storage unit, hidden away at Sentinel and Lock Secure Storage, in the quaint market town of Horsham in Sussex, was pulling at my curiosity with the force of a magical magnet. After doing a deep dive into the details given by her lawyer, it became clear that breaking into Sentinel and Lock would be about as easy as sneaking a lion into a library. The place had security tighter than a vault, with tech wizardry that made Fort Knox look like a kiddie park. Aunt V had clearly picked the most fortified storage facility for a reason. It was as much about keeping grubby paws out as it was about preserving whatever secrets she stashed away. So, in a move as bold as it was desperate, I picked up the phone and rang them, asking about unit availability with the casual interest of someone shopping for groceries, not diving into family mysteries. Predictably, they were as full as a treasure chest, but they promised to ring me back if anything opened up within the next month. It was a long shot, but then again, long shots are kind of our thing. The notion of sneaking into Sentinel and Lock like a cat burglar in a heist movie definitely had its appeal. But let's be real, the thought of setting off alarms and getting caught on CCTV faster than you can say magic mischief had me second-guessing that plan faster than RG ditching those hipster clothes. And with the syndicate's eyes and ears seemingly everywhere, it felt like playing tag with a dragon, thrilling but monumentally unwise. Then there was the wild idea of morphing myself into Aunt V's lookalike using the hacked shimmer ring. For a hot minute, it seemed like a plan straight out of a spy thriller, until RG poured cold water over it with the reality check that impersonating the dearly departed was a no-go. Apparently, these rings have their limits, and conjuring up the dead is a big ask, way bigger magic than we were packing. Sure, we've got a trove of magical gadgets that could potentially get us through the front door, but let's face it, blowing them on a break-in feels like using a sledgehammer to crack a nut. Plus, I'm betting they've got several layers of remote trigger surveillance that could potentially outmatch even the charms of our enchanted music box. It's like trying to hack into their security with a standard laptop against their cutting-edge encryption. It's not impossible, but it's definitely a challenge. So, here's the game plan, we play the waiting game. Yeah, not as exciting as donning a disguise and dodging laser beams, but sometimes the best strategy is the one that doesn't end with you becoming a feature on the evening news. Patience might not be my strong suit, but when it comes to unlocking the secrets of the universe, or at least, those stashed away by Aunt V, I can play the long game. Onward we go, because while the storage unit mystery is simmering on the back burner, the heat's definitely turned up on finding that fourth puzzle box and figuring out how to melt Jenny's frosty heart without turning our hideout into a swimming pool.
In the midst of our meticulous planning, a formidable challenge emerged, casting a shadow of jeopardy over our mission to transport my angel safely into the care of Dr. Hawthorne. Our strategy hinged on the creation of a personal traverse, a portal meant to bridge the distance between our hidden refuge and the doctor's office nestled in the heart of Harley Street. Yet, within this carefully crafted plan lurked a moment of vulnerability, a crack through which disaster could seep. The crux of our dilemma was my angel's all tattoo, a beacon of magic that, if revealed even for the briefest of instances during the transition, could signal our location to the Cerberus Syndicate. This sliver of time, though mere seconds in duration, threatened to unravel our efforts, exposing not only us, but also Dr. Hawthorne to the far-reaching gaze of our adversaries. Diving deep into the arcane depths of my enchanted backpack, I unearthed a solution steeped in both ingenuity and a touch of the macabre. Memories of a time when my own tracking tattoo, the crow inked into my neck, loomed over me like a dark cloud. Back then, I had employed a temporary means to obscure it, a method echoing the finality of the ritual the Aboriginal tribe leader used to hide it forever. Both techniques required a patch of dead man's skin, a morbid shield against magical prying eyes. These patches, once a part of my arsenal against those who would track me, were drenched in a mix of history and the supernatural. Before undergoing the tribe's ritual, I relied on this chilling yet effective method to conceal the tracking tattoo. The key to its power lay in the elixir from the Medi's floor root. This elixir, which had only just snapped me from a magically induced stasis, was to be the cornerstone of my plan. With only a few drops remaining, these remnants of our journey to Montreal became invaluable. I prepared the patch, embedding it with the elixir, readying it to mask the tracking magic of my Angel's Isle tattoo, a beautiful yet cursed mark that had transformed from an emblem of freedom to a shackle of surveillance.
The stage was set for an evening that promised to tilt our world on its axis. As I stood there, a spectator to RG's prelude to magic, I couldn't help but marvel at the spectacle. With the grace of a seasoned enchanter, he administered a magic shot, his veins becoming conduits for ancient power. The transformation was immediate, his eyes sparkling with radiance that seemed to pull the shadows tighter around us. RG then produced his door handle from the depths of his coat, an artifact as ordinary as it was astonishing, and with a dramatic gesture that could have easily been at home on a magician's stage, he summoned the glowing outline of a personal traverse. The air buzzed with the charge of magic, painting the night with strokes of luminescence. There we were, the rogue duo, with the unconscious Jenny cradled in our arms, stepping toward the beckoning glow of the traverse. Our destination? Harley Street, or more precisely, Dr. Cassandra Hawthorne's office, a haven nestled within the heart of London. The doctor's office, a cocoon woven from comfort and mystery, embraced us. The walls, if they could speak, would whisper tales of countless souls steered back from the brink by Dr. Hawthorne's deft hands. There she stood, her hair tied back, with her eyes mirroring the magical radiance of RG's, speaking volumes about the journey upon which we were embarking. With the scant exchange of words, Dr. Hawthorne gestured toward her own personal traverse. This one a portal to a realm safeguarded by her protective enchantments, a sanctuary where Jenny's fragmented psyche could be tenderly pieced back together. This gateway shimmered with promise, a testament to the healing that lay just beyond its luminescent threshold. Yet, as if fate itself conspired to test our resolve, Jenny stirred from her magical slumber. Her awakening was not gentle, but rage unleashed, her gaze, filled with defiance and disarray, fixed upon RG. Venom dripped from her single-word accusation, "You!" As her hand moved to the patch covering her tracking tattoo, the air thrummed with danger, a reminder of the threadbare veil between safety and peril. In that heartbeat suspended between breaths, I was catapulted from paralysis into action. With the resolve of someone who knows too well what's at stake, I hurled myself and Jenny through Dr. Hawthorne's traverse. Our descent into the portal was a whirlwind of urgency and chaos, a leap of faith into the unknown.
Upon running through Dr. Hawthorne's traverse, we found ourselves in a room defined by its stark simplicity. Bathed in serene light filtering through large windows, the space offered a view of a tranquil forest beyond. Yet, this peaceful tableau was abruptly shattered by a scene of chaos unfolding before us. In the center of this supposed sanctuary, a furious battle raged, a stark contrast to the healing atmosphere we had anticipated. Runeweaver and my angel were engaged in a fierce struggle, mirroring the internal turmoil consuming my beloved. Their conflict was a visceral punch, the physical manifestation of her inner struggles erupting into violence. The confrontation escalated with startling intensity, my angel's strength seemingly amplified by the chaos within her, as she seized Runeweaver, lifting her with an ease that belied her slender frame. The threat was immediate and lethal, my angel's hands closing around Runeweaver's throat in a grip that promised oblivion. Compelled by a desperate need to intervene, to break the lethal deadlock that threatened to claim my friend, I moved forward. Yet, Dr. Hawthorne, her eyes still sparkling with radiance, the afterglow of the magic that had brought us here, stood as a barrier to my frantic approach. She held me back, signaling that the solution lay not in physical intervention but in the arcane. With a flourish that seemed to draw upon the essence of her being, Dr. Hawthorne chanted fast, igniting the air with an electrifying display of magic that cascaded towards my angel. This magic, while tearing through the air with the intensity of lightning, paradoxically brought a transformative calm, an enchantment that balanced the tempest's wrath with a tranquil touch. This conjured storm of energy swirled around my angel, weaving a complex pattern of light that acted as both a calming influence and an ethereal restraint, more potent than any chain of iron. Her violent hold on Runeweaver was broken, the immediate danger averted as my friend collapsed, gasping for air. As the tempest of magic subsided, a palpable shift occurred. The air, charged with the remnants of enchantment, seemed to breathe a sigh of relief. Dr. Hawthorne approached my angel with a calm that belied the ferocity of moments before. Her touch, when it came, was gentle, a balm to the turmoil that had raged within my beloved. And then, in a moment as fragile as it was fleeting, clarity pierced the haze that had shrouded my angel's consciousness. Her eyes met mine, a glimmer of recognition, of connection, that transcended the chaos. Her voice, carrying my name, was a lifeline thrown across the chasm that had separated us. Dr. Hawthorne's solemn affirmation of the journey ahead did little to dampen the spark of hope that had been ignited in that moment of recognition. The road to recovery was laid out before us, daunting in its complexity, yet undeniable in its possibility. The encounter had laid bare the depth of my angel's entanglement, the myriad threads of manipulation and control that bound her. Yet, in the wake of the battle, in the quiet that followed the storm, there was hope. The very essence of my angel, of my Jenny, lingered, and for the first time in what felt like an eternity, I dared to allow her name to cross my lips not as a whisper of the past, but as a clarion call for the future. It was a lighthouse amidst the storm, guiding us toward the dawn of her restoration. Until next time, my kindred spirits, keep the flame of belief ever burning.